there for a long moment, thinking.
Michelle's right. He is telling the truth about Talcumar, about who he is and what he said. And he wants to find out more about the attack on the city, he said, sounding as though the words were being dragged from him. That's his focus right now. I can't speak for his intentions beyond that, though.
That's all we care about right now, observed Tayrus, studying both Aaron and Siner from the corner. The representative had been quieter since Siner had appeared, not cowed exactly, but certainly less inclined to speak up. Weir thought that was likely due to his not trusting Siner, more than any sense of intimidation, though the latter undoubtedly still played some small part in his newfound demeanor.
And he thinks there might be a way to get us some information.
How?
Asked Weir and Aaron simultaneously, though Weir's tone was hopeful and Aaron's laced with doubt.
Me.
Michelle spoke calmly, though Weir could see the weary concern in her eyes easily enough.
Tayrus says that the Chatet, the host of the Chatet,
she quickly corrected herself at a look from both Tayrus and Siner, hands held up defensively in a flicker of her former self,
claimed that the Banes are involved. We all know that they're out there somewhere, and... Well, I do have a connection to them.
Aaron's eyes widened, and even Weir recoiled.
You cannot be serious, said Aaron immediately.
Siner thinks that he can dampen the effect the Elatai have on her, filter it long enough for Ishell to focus on the voices. Try and communicate with them, said Tayrus.
He thinks?
Weir looked at Siner dubiously.
Yes,
Siner returned the look evenly.
I'm sorry, Prince Torin, but this situation is hardly regular. If you are looking for guarantees, look elsewhere. This is a risk.
And our best chance, interjected Ishell, irritation thick in her voice. And also my decision. Even if the rest of you seem to think that I'm incapable of making those any more.
Tayrus and Aaron both looked vaguely embarrassed at that last jab. Weir understood their hesitation, though, feeling some of it himself. It was Ishell's choice, naturally, but Ishell had also hardly been herself lately. There was some question over whether her ability to make decisions was impaired, which was why they had already been gradually, quietly, shifting some of her more vital responsibilities onto Aaron's shoulders.
You'd be putting a lot of faith in him, Aaron said to her eventually. He wants answers, but he hardly has your best interests at heart.
Ishell snorted.
Thank you for that insight, Aaron.
She shook her head, and Weir could see the determination in her eyes.
I have made my decision.
She hesitated.
But I would very much like it if you were there to help, to make sure nothing goes wrong.
She said the last softly, a genuine entreaty in her voice. Nobody spoke as Aaron stared, jaw jutting, as if he was thinking of another argument to attack with. Finally, though, he gave a short nod.
I'll be watching, he said,
the words as much to Siner as to Ishell. They quickly agreed to use the observatory for the experiment, a rarely frequented upper section of Tul Athian that opened out high above on the slopes of Elin Tora. There were no external entries to or exits from the rooftop courtyard. It had been created with the same smooth high walls that characterized Fedrus Idri, hiding even the city below from view. But it was private, beyond the protective wards of the toll, and only a short few steps if they needed to get Ishell back behind the defenses. For their current purposes, that was all they needed. Ishell was technically free to come and go from the toll, though the council would undoubtedly have liked to be informed of her plan. She was technically under no obligation to do so. They left as a group, taking the little-used staircase upward. It was a long climb, a full 15 minutes by Weir's estimate, and he found himself drawing a little on essence toward the end. He suspected that some of the others were doing the same. Certainly everyone seemed content to keep conversation to a minimum, focusing instead on conserving their breath. Finally, they passed through the upper door and into the open air, and Weir squinted against the sudden glare from above, dulled though it was with the sun behind clouds. The observatory was a strange area, one that Weir had visited only a few times before. It was bowl-like, as if a large section had been scooped from the side of Elin Torah, giving its occupants a clear view of the sky in all directions. He knew that there were plenty of theories about what it had originally been, everything from an actual observatory to mark and analyze the stars, to some sort of private retreat, a repose away from the distractions of daily life. Weir could see its potentially having been the latter. The sides of the observatory were sheer, smooth rock that still somehow managed to exude an alien beauty, marred only by razor-thin edges at the top. Those were as sharp as they looked, Weir had been told, an extra defensive measure, presumably, for anything somehow able to climb this high. Though there were no obvious essence mechanisms, he had been assured that when the toll's defenses were triggered, this area was as well guarded as any of the entrances down below. The remains of a tower sat in the center of the observatory. During the war, the council had built it to see over the edge and down into the city below, both to mark the movements of the loyalists and as a means of potentially raining down destruction upon anyone who got too close. Its dismantling had been one very minor stipulation of the treaty. Ishell took a deep, shaky breath as she paused in the doorway. They had taken her up here a few times early on, after it had become clear that the walls of the toll were somehow protecting her. It was by far the best place to test her limits. They had no idea what would happen to Ishell if she was completely overcome by her connection to the Elatai, what the consequences might be. That was a terrifying thought, not just for Ishell, but for the entire city. Aaron laid a hand on Ishell's arm as she visibly wavered.
"We won't let it go too far."
Ishell shot him a small smile, then stepped out over the threshold and into the open air. Weir found himself holding his breath as he watched, though he knew the reaction wouldn't be instantaneous. Ishell wandered over to the middle of the 50-foot-wide area, standing near the wreckage of the tower. She suddenly groaned and sat heavily on a beam, head in her hands.
"Are you all right?"
Aaron hurried over to her. Ishell was motionless for a second. Then she snarled and twisted quickly, leaping to her feet and sending Aaron and Tayrus stumbling backward in panic at the sudden motion. Weir leaped forward and tapped essence immediately, readying himself to try to subdue her. Then his heart slowed to something resembling an acceptable pace as Ishell started laughing.
"Fate, that's not funny," grumbled Tayrus, shooting an angry look at the young woman, who simply stuck out her tongue at him impudently.
"If you'd been able to see the looks on your faces, you'd think differently," Ishell retorted cheerfully, still chuckling. "Fates, Tayrus, it's been less than a minute. How far gone do you think I am?"
Tayrus growled something under his breath, and even Aaron gave her a disapproving look. Siner didn't seem to have any opinion on the joke, merely seating himself opposite Ishell.
"Has it started?" he asked her directly.
Ishell frowned.
"What did I just say?"
"I heard you," said Siner patiently, "but your eyes say something different."
Aaron pushed past Tayrus to stare into Ishell's eyes. He gave a gentle nod as Weir saw what the augurs had. Ishell's eyes were cloudy, the clear blue and white hazing slightly towards gray.
"It started," Aaron confirmed quietly. "Do you feel anything?"
Siner coughed politely before Ishell could reply.
"I'm going to start studying the connection," he said, only half asking permission.
Ishell indicated her acceptance.
"The usual. Just that pressure in the back of my head," she replied to Aaron, "but yes, it's there."
She spoke with some discomfort, and Weir could hardly blame her. A few weeks ago, it had been almost an hour before she had reached this stage.
You can watch, but silence would be best, said Siner calmly, cracking open an eye to indicate he was directing the comment mostly at Aaron. Aaron scowled, but at a look from Michelle, relented. Weir observed for a while, but everything happening was related to Khan. There was simply nothing for him to see. He wandered a short distance away, gazing at the gardens that grew around the edges of the observatory.
"Have you given any thought as to how much to tell the council, sire?"
Weir started, not having realized that Tayris had joined him. They were slightly apart from the others, isolated enough that their conversation was private.
"You mean about Caden?" Weir shook his head. "Not yet. But..."
He shrugged awkwardly.
"My initial reaction is that it's not a good idea to say anything."
Siner had spent almost a half hour trying to convince them of Caden's past as our kind DeVade. It was only after the Augur's willingness to let Ishell read him and her confirmation of the information that Weir had even been able to consider the news. He still didn't know what to make of it. He was confident that the man he'd come to know was on their side. Caden's actions had said enough as far as Weir was concerned. But knowing what he was capable of...
"I agree," Tayris kept his voice low. "No good would come of it. Half of them would say we were making things up again, and the other half would want to lock Caden away until it was all sorted out and verified. There certainly wouldn't be enough of them willing to simply accept the information and adjust appropriately."
He sighed.
"As strange as it sounds, I don't think it's information that they need to have either. They don't trust Caden as it is. Making that worse would be a mistake."
Weir nodded thoughtfully.
"So if this works,"
he cast a quick glance across at Ishell, who was still quiet and motionless, "and we actually figure out where in fates the Banes are, then we go to the Council and the Assembly with our proof."
"What about the Shateth?" asked Tayris uneasily.
"I... still agree with Siner," Weir said reluctantly. "From what that Shateth's host, Elder Tolliver, said, they have a part to play in whatever the Venerate are planning. We need to get rid of them."
"You mean kill them?"
"I mean kill them."
It was hard for Weir to say the words. There were clearly still people, or the remains of them, locked away somewhere beneath the Shateth's control. But it also seemed clear that there was no saving them.
"The Council will never agree."
"The Council will not be involved." Weir made the statement firmly. "This is a time for decisions, Tayris, not committees."
Tayris snorted.
"It wasn't so long ago that you would have said the opposite. That our taking these matters into our own hands was very much against the law."
Weir gave him a wry grin.
"I've had a year of politics to shake me out of that bad habit."
He quickly sobered at Tayris's vaguely reproving look.
"I still think we should try to uphold the law. But I also understand now that what's right isn't always what's legal, and that the opposite can be true, too."
"Law is about order, not right and wrong," Tayris agreed. "And the latter should always trump the former."
He gave a soft laugh.
"You've come a long way since we met."
Weir chuckled too.
"I don't know whether... Ishell?"
The sudden concern in Aaron's raised voice cut through the conversation. Weir and Tayris turned at once, hurrying over to the others. Weir blanched as he saw Ishell, spotting the signs that were becoming familiar to him now. Ishell's hands were trembling, not violently yet, and the rest of her body remained under her control so far, but enough to be obvious at a glance.
"I thought you said that you could dampen the effects," said Aaron anxiously.
"You'll need to focus, Ishell," said Siner steadily, ignoring Aaron. "This connection is like a noose around your mind. Every time you pull away, it tightens, digs in harder and makes things worse. It's hurting you because you're resisting it so much."
"I'm scared,"
whispered Ishell, her eyes wide and blank as she stared into nothing.
I don't want to let them in.
I'll protect you. Siner's voice was gentle. But I can't until you get out of the way. Ischel gave a tremulous nod, the usually brash young woman as obviously frightened as Weir had ever seen her. She gave a sudden soft sigh, her shoulders slumping and head bowing. When she looked up, her eyes were completely black.
They're here,
she said faintly, terror still in her voice.
They want to know about me. They're trying to burrow in. They're trying to get in further.
The words were barely more than a whimper.
Ask them about the Chateau, about the attack, said Siner, the urgency in his tone rising. Ask them where they are and what is being planned, what they're seeing. Anything.
A tear rolled down Ischel's cheek and her body was shaking now, though she hadn't started the mad ramblings that had previously accompanied that stage. A good sign, Weir thought. Aaron moved behind her, grasping her gently by the shoulders to stop her from falling over. Everyone watched mutely, holding their breath.
I'm trying, said Ischel shakily. They won't answer. They keep asking.
She gasped, face contorted in pain. Weir and Aaron both stepped forward, but she recovered quickly, sitting straight again.
They're asking to be let in, for me to join them.
The last was said in a horrified whisper. Siner shook his head.
Keep going, he said firmly. We have to know.
Weir moved closer, his disquiet growing. Siner, we need the information, but not at the expense of her health, he said firmly.
She can handle it, Siner glanced at him. Trust me, Prince Torin.
Weir hesitated. Ischel, if you want to stop...
I'm all right.
Ischel's voice told a different story, but Weir accepted the statement, exchanging nervous glances with Aaron and Tayris before eventually indicating that Siner should continue. A few minutes passed breathlessly, only Siner's occasional promptings breaking the silence. Eventually, the old augur shifted.
Ischel, he said quietly, you may not be able to get your answers just by asking.
What do you mean?
Ischel asked, still trembling in Aaron's grasp.
You need to use the connection yourself. Read them.
Are you sure? Began Aaron, but he reluctantly subsided at Siner's glare. The uneasy hush fell again for what seemed like an eternity.
I see something,
Ischel suddenly gasped. Everyone leaned forward unconsciously as she spoke.
They're in a forest. Some sort of temple. There are huge statues lining the entrance, each with a symbol. Men and women. 9 of them. The other Elatai are everywhere here.
A shudder ran through her. She spoke urgently but also absently, as if in a trance.
Targaryen, too. Hundreds of them. And people. But the Banes aren't attacking them. They're carrying things out of the temple.
What are they carrying? Asked Siner. Do you recognize where this is?
Ischel didn't respond, but beside Weir, Tayris shifted.
Desrael, said the scarred man.
When the others looked at him questioningly, he gave a firm nod.
That's their sacred vault. I haven't seen it myself, but I've heard of it. Those statues are their gods, and they're supposed to be the only ones who can open it.
And their gods are the Veneret, murmured Weir, swallowing.
They've seen me.
Ischel whispered suddenly, as if trying to make sure that the Elatai couldn't hear her.
They know I'm here.
What else do you see? Pressed Siner before anyone else could speak.
No. No, I have to get out.
There was panic in Ischel's tone.
Let me out.
Tell us what you see, said Siner firmly.
They know I'm here. They're going to tell the others.
Ischel's voice was getting louder, and it was becoming more urgent.
They know we know now. They were waiting for something. But they're going to launch the attack now. Oh, fates, it's our fault. They're going to hit Ilyn Ilon, use the Elatai to try to cripple us before we can react. And they're coming for us now. They're coming.
Weir felt the blood drain from his face, and he heard a sharp intake of breath from Tayris.
That's enough, Siner, said Tayris,
and Aaron began pulling Ischel toward the door.
Stop,
Siner's voice cracked like a whip.
Michelle, it's too late to take it back now, and we need more information. What about the Chatez?
They're coming! They're coming!
Michelle's voice was breaking now, and she was shaking violently, Aaron having to adjust his grip to hold on to her. Suddenly she gasped, and her eyes, still completely black, went wide. She gripped Aaron's arm so tightly that the young man grunted in pain.
They know the Chatez are here! We're not safe! Nowhere here is safe! We need to leave! Fates! Oh, fates, they're coming! We need to leave!
Eschel screamed as she writhed and broke free of Aaron's grip, black lines creeping along her body. Aaron reached for her, but somehow she twisted and threw him, sending him sailing through the air to land in a heap 10 feet away.
Grab her!
Shouted Weir, strengthening himself with essence and seeing Tayrus do the same. Siner helped, too. They wrestled with Eschel as she resisted like a wild animal, clawing and shrieking and thrashing with every inch of her body.
"We need to get her inside," growled Tayrus, as a flailing limb caught him across the chest. "We need to tie her up and keep questioning her,"
Siner yelled the response above Eschel's frenzied screams.
"She was getting answers. I just need... No!"
Weir glared across at Siner, doing his best to restrain Eschel while still being gentle.
"She goes back inside. Now!"
Siner's lip curled, but after a second he looked away with a brief frustrated dip of the head. More black lines were spreading across Eschel's face and limbs, almost like a shadow's, except these were far thicker and straighter, somehow more disturbing. Whatever they were seemed to be giving her near inhuman strength because it took all three of them, four once Aaron had recovered enough to help, to drag her 20 feet to the door and finally through it. Eschel gave a final gasp as she crossed the threshold, then went limp. Their exhausted, shocked panting was the only sound to break the silence as they looked at her with a mixture of trepidation and concern. She was unconscious, the black lines on her skin not fading yet, her breaths coming in what looked like dangerously short and uneven bursts. Aaron was the first to move. He punched Siner in the face.
"You said you would protect her!"
he snarled as the older augur staggered back, the attack clearly having taken him by surprise.
"Are you actually capable of not doing fate's cursed awful things?"
Weir placed a restraining hand on Aaron's shoulder as Siner steadied himself, shaking his head dazedly.
"I chose to prioritize everyone else. You heard what she said."
He looked around at the other three. There was no defensiveness to his tone, only cold certainty.
"We should have tried to get more. Now we know that Desriel has Banes and that they are going to send the Elatai to attack us here."
"Have already sent," corrected Tayrus bleakly.
"Have already sent," agreed Siner. "And she said that they know the Chatez are here too. It sounded like there was a purpose to that."
There was clear frustration in his tone.
"We'll tell the council," said Weir, "and advise that they kill them immediately. But right now we need to alert the city that there are Elatai on the way."
Saying the words suddenly made the horror of the situation more real, and a queasy wave of fear washed through him, though he quickly forced back the sensation. He turned to look at Eschel.
"Aaron, do you think that you can take her somewhere to recover, and then inform the council of what's happened? Tell them that they need to deal with the Chatez before... whatever's coming."
"I'll do it," said Siner. "The council will take too long."
"No. I need you with me," said Weir.
He deliberated, then motioned to Tayrus.
"You too."
He gazed at the two men grimly.
"We need to convince the assembly to evacuate Ilyn Illan."
Chapter 28 Davian sat on the sole chair in Tal's room, eyes close to drooping shut despite the seriousness of his situation. First bell, fainter but still audible here, had rung out a while ago, but he was still no wiser than when he had arrived. He'd had 10 minutes of excited discussion with Tal, mostly answering questions to his vague irritation, and then Tal and Naya had needed to leave. A scheduled requirement of their time was all he'd been able to gather. Tal had been suitably apologetic, but had told him in no uncertain terms to stay put. Tao apparently trusted the others imprisoned here in the crater about as much as he did the Dargathan. Davian had been promised answers upon their return, but that had been hours ago. He'd watched out the window for a while, not that there was a great deal to see, and then done his best to rest. His reserve remained dangerously low, and he couldn't afford to keep draining it just to stay alert. The door abruptly opened, and he leaped to his feet, his heart skipping a beat. He sank back into the chair as Tal and Naya walked through. The two of them looked exhausted, Tal in particular seeming a hollow shell of the man who had greeted him just a few hours earlier. Dark bags sat under his eyes, and every movement was slow, strained, clearly taking effort. He gave Davian a cheerless smile, trudging over to the bed and collapsing onto it. Naya, who also looked tired, shut and locked the door behind her, then took up position by it, giving Davian a cool glance as she did so. Their movements had the feel of an established routine.
"What happened?" asked Davian tentatively.
"Nothing."
It was Tal, staring at the ceiling from his prone position on the bed.
"Which is always good."
Davian glared at him.
"I don't know what that means."
"Sorry," Tal groaned, levering himself up into a sitting position again and waving away Naya's look of concern. The woman threw an accusatory glare at Davian, who shrank a little beneath it.
"You're probably wondering what in El's name is going on."
"You could say that," admitted Davian dryly. "Where were you?"
"Down below, lending essence to the cause."
Tal rubbed his face tiredly, seeing Davian's expression.
"Right. Where to begin?"
He glanced over at Naya, pleading for help.
"This tower is a vessel. If it doesn't get enough essence, everything in Zavala collapses," said Naya, sounding bored. "And then we all die."
"Everything collapses," Davian repeated pensively.
Tal sighed, giving Naya a wry look.
"What do you know about this place?" he asked Davian.
"Not a lot," Davian admitted.
"The scavenging teams figured out pretty quickly that we traveled through time to get here. Other than that..."
He shrugged.
"So nothing, then," muttered Naya.
Tal closed his eyes. When he opened them again, he seemed stronger, sitting straighter.
"This city, Zvelar, was the capital of a desert nation on a continent far to the north. Around 3,500 years ago now, give or take, by both our reckoning."
He hesitated, as if loath to reveal what he was about to.
"It was where Cassandrid was born."
Davian raised an eyebrow.
"I take it the city wasn't like this back then?"
"From the way he tells it, it was pleasant enough, as good as any other place where large groups of people congregate. He certainly has a nostalgia for it."
Tal sounded sad.
"When he was 12, Cassandrid took part in a trial, a sort of test to pass into manhood, in which he had to go into the desert and kill a sand serpent. When he returned 3 days later, Zvelar was gone. Collapsed in upon itself, withered to dust, everyone who had lived there dead, including Cassandrid's parents and 3 sisters. Everyone who bore witness to the destruction said that it happened in an instant, that it had been a deliberate attack. There was only one group in the region who had the sort of power that could effect such a strike, a race called the Shalis."
Tal paused, sentiment in his voice as he continued.
"The Shalas denied responsibility, but the survivors of the Zvael remained convinced of their guilt, particularly after a few years when it was discovered that Cassandrid was able to wield Khan. It was a power that the Shalas were known to abhor as a rare and dangerous weapon, and one that they immediately called upon him to abandon."
He shook his head.
"Cassandrid became convinced that the Shalas had destroyed Zvelar to kill him, to stop him from coming into his power. He eventually led the war against them,
and though it ultimately destroyed his people, he won many years later. With our help.
Tal shifted, the story unmistakably painful to tell.
Cassandra's motivation to go back in time has always been this place. It's always been to save his family, his friends, his people. After the Ilshara went up, after I broke the Javet and Cassandra realized that his goal might still be lifetimes away, he tried to replicate what the Darisians had done in Dylanus. Against our advice, he built on their work and made a portal to the past, I suppose, to Zvelar of old.
Davian glanced out the window at the ruined city. That obviously didn't go as planned. Tal gave a low, humorless laugh.
No. Instead, Cassandra created this mess. Closer than anyone has ever come to being able to go back, but still an unmitigated disaster.
He shook his head sadly.
We're fairly certain now that he actually destroyed the city. That in his efforts to save Zvelar, he was the one who caused its destruction.
Davian swallowed, trying to parse the information.
So we're somewhere in those 3 days when Cassandra left the city as a child? Inside the very moment when it was destroyed, in fact. He did manage to open a portal back, obviously, one that could be safely traversed, Tal said quietly. But in doing so, he miscalculated. He had a series of vessels set up to dampen the effects of the portal in Ilshan Gath Del Teth, but he needed a duplicate set of those same vessels here. So when it opened, it caused a cataclysm on this end, a massive distortion that ripped Zvelar almost entirely from the time stream.
Like when we let time flow around us? Asked Davian. Tal screwed up his face.
Yes and no. We use the parallel of the river because what we do is much gentler by comparison. When we push against the flow of time, we resist it, but we're never in danger of separating ourselves from it, never threaten to truly break away from it.
He shook his head.
Whereas Zvelar was violent, messy. A better analogy for what happened here would be that it was like a limb that was almost torn off, one that's now just hanging on to the body by a few pieces of sinew.
Davian felt a chill run through him.
Which means...
Caden glanced across at Naya, who shrugged.
It's too far out of step, essentially. You only have to look at the sky to know it. Nearly 4 months here, and probably only a few seconds back in Cassandra's childhood. And El knows how long has passed in our own eras. Time is broken here. And the result is that the time stream isn't trying to drag Zvelar back into alignment. It's trying to exercise it.
Davian looked around at the steel tower.
So, all of this is everything we could do to slow that process down.
Davian walked over to one of the steel plates, touching it wonderingly.
But if you can't use Khan, how do you make the vessels?
They were clearly more than simple essence conduits. And why out of metal? Naya chuckled, a small smile playing on her lips as she watched Davian.
My rations for a week, if you guess.
It's complicated, Tal assured Davian, giving Naya a stern look.
I have time, said Davian dryly. I need to...
He trailed off. There was a grinding sound coming from outside the door. Tal gestured urgently to Davian, but it was already too late. The door was swinging open and 3 Dargathan were slithering through. Davian's heart sank as he took in the creatures. Each of them at least 9 feet tall, they had to contort to fit through the doorway. Short, obscenely muscular arms hung from powerful serpentine frames as they came to an abrupt halt. All 3 were staring at Davian.
So he is here,
hissed the first.
Did you think his rope would not be found?
Davian winced. He'd forgotten about the rope he'd left dangling at the edge of the crater.
Vesheseth was right, said the second, sounding amused. You were hiding him all along, Davide. This does not bode well for our deal.
Tal's gaze flicked from the Banes to Debian, then to Naya. He rubbed his face tiredly.
I suppose it doesn't, he said heavily.
He gave a reluctant nod to Naya. Naya flicked her hand out, the spear already off her belt, sizzling with essence. In one smooth motion, she pivoted and threw the spear, taking the nearest Dargaethan through the mouth. The remaining two creatures hissed in alarm as they spun to face the threat. Davian watched in open-mouthed shock as Naya calmly gestured, the whip of essence that had lashed out along with the spear, flashing as the dead Dargaethan began slumping to the floor. She ripped the weapon free in a shower of black blood and spun it, the sharp-edged stone moving in a deadly dance as it flew at the two Dargaethan, snaking at one and then the other in rapid succession, targeting the soft spots of mouth and eyes. Davian stepped forward, but Tal put a restraining hand on his arm, shaking his head.
You'll only get in the way.
Davian accepted the statement reluctantly, gazing in wonder as the short spear blurred between the two creatures, sparks flying every time it connected. Finally, the weapon struck home again, and the second bane crumpled, the edged stone through its eye. The final Dargaethan snarled and vanished out the door before Naya could wrest the spear free again. Davian's heart leaped to his throat, and he made to go after the creature, but again Tal restrained him. The other man gestured to the ground where the fight had taken place.
No need.
Heart still pounding, Davian stared in confusion as he spotted what Tal had indicated. Several Dargaethan scales scattered across the steel, clearly torn off during the fighting. He watched mutely as Naya calmly snapped the spear back into her hand, taking a cloth from her pocket and wiping it carefully. She tucked it at her side again once it was clean, then proceeded to stroll over to the window.
There he goes, she said, sounding like she was commentating for them. Athsissus was always a cowardly little creature. He's so excited that he hasn't even realized. He's going as fast as he can. He's reached the edge. The Elgoriot have seen him, and... Oh. Oh.
She watched for a moment longer, then made a face.
That did not end well for him.
Davian stared, head spinning, as Tal wandered over to the dead Dargaethan, giving one of them an irritated prod with his toe.
I'll take it, he muttered. We can't afford this.
Naya turned back from the window. The two both seemed more frustrated than anything else.
Three more down. That leaves a dozen. We can't afford to lose any more, she agreed bleakly.
You didn't want them dead? Asked Davian in confusion. Tal reached out and shut the door.
Not really. He rubbed his chin worriedly. They are how we are getting food through the portal. They take the metal to Ilshangath Dilteth, and in exchange they get sent back with supplies.
Except that the journey sends them insane. They come back at random positions along the edge of the dome around the city, and then Tal and I have to help the other Dargaethan hunt them down and kill them just to get the food, said Naya. So they are a limited resource.
Davian thought back to his first night in the city.
I saw one, I think, he said, shifting uncomfortably at the memory. It was eating one of its own.
Southeast section of the city?
Naya nodded cheerfully at Davian's affirming gesture.
We're responsible for the decorations. The smell of their own dead seems to attract them, so even though they could come back anywhere around the perimeter, they always seem to end up there. It's made our job a lot easier.
Davian shuddered, as much at Naya's casual attitude toward the grisly scene he'd witnessed as anything else.
What sends them insane? He asked. You said that the portal could be safely traversed, and the portal's just down below. Why haven't you just gone back the other way?
Naya snorted.
Why didn't we think of that?
She looked at Tal.
Why haven't we just done that, Tal?
All right, said Tal with a small smile, shooting a vaguely warning glance at Naya. Don't forget that you asked exactly the same question when we got here.
Naya glowered at him, but subsided.
The portal protects passage to the past, to here, Tal explained to Debian. The other way is essentially like the rift in Dylanus. You should be able to use it, but we certainly can't.
Oh, Debian chewed his lip. But the Dargaethan?
The Dargaethan survive because of their armor. Their scales provide a natural protection against being drained. It's a perfect shield, almost impossible to replicate. The Dorisians nearly succeeded with the devices you know as shackles, but even they couldn't get it right. As soon as shackles start interacting with the Darklands, they become overzealous. Start stripping away anything that might dampen essence. Tal shrugged. The Dargaethan are ultimately not people, though. They're smarter than animals, but they don't have the mental capacity of a human. We think they sort of drift once they enter the time stream, spend eons in there, an eternity of just flailing around, slowly going mad until eventually the time stream spits them back out where it thinks they're supposed to be. He rubbed his chin. It's like if we were stranded at sea, but we could see gulls circling in the distance, we'd recognize that there might be land and swim toward it. The Dargaethan don't have that level of ability to discern. They have to just swim blindly in any direction. If the possible directions included all of space and time, he finished dryly. Debian rubbed his head. Things were becoming clearer, gradually.
Speaking of Dargaethan, said Naya from the corner, eyeing the two bodies on the floor, I'll start cleaning these up if you two are going to talk forever.
She wandered over to the corpses without waiting for a response, and Debian grimaced as she started using her spear to pry scales loose, revealing an oily, dark green skin underneath.
All right, he said to Tal, turning away from the grisly sight.
He assumed that there was a purpose to what the woman was doing, but he didn't want to know right now.
So they arrive back in their own time, insane from the journey, and then are sent back with supplies.
He paused.
Why exactly do they agree to all of that?
They don't, Tal assured him. They're controlled. Their minds get altered before they're sent here. By Gassandrid, unfortunately, he added, seeing Debian's briefly hopeful look. He's the only one of us strong enough to do it. They still mostly think and act for themselves, but they have overarching commands that they can't ignore. They'd never have organized enough to be in charge here otherwise. He shrugged. And once they've gone mad back in Ilshangath Delteth, there's not a lot of negotiation. Cassandrid can control them just long enough to keep them calm while we load them with food, and then we send them back through.
Debian considered.
When they get back here, I assume they don't come back at the beginning again, when you all arrived?
No, they return immediately. The length of time they spend in the outside world doesn't seem to affect when they come back, admitted Tal. It lines up with a study Seer did on some of the creatures that had been here early on. He said that they all had these almost indiscernible markers, a kind of time decay that permeated their body, harmless enough but more pronounced the longer that they had been in Zavalar. An invisible clock on their time here.
Debian frowned.
So you think that the portal here adjusts when we arrive accordingly?
He shook his head.
That doesn't make sense for me. I haven't been here before.
You've traveled through time before. Perhaps you have similar markers, observed Tal.
He shrugged at Davian's look.
It's the best guess I have. And before you ask, no, I don't know how long passes in the real world compared to here, but time is passing. The Dargaethan who returned to Ilshangath Delteth with metal all did so weeks after entering the portal, not seconds.
Debian relented with a sigh. He glanced around at the sound of the door opening, making a face as he saw Naya dragging one of the Dargaethan corpses thoroughly descaled and smearing black blood everywhere, outside. He opened his mouth to ask, then shook his head and snapped it shut again, turning back to Tal. "What is it about this metal?" he asked suddenly. It had been one of the questions burning in him since he'd joined Raeleth's scavenging team. "I think I understand the rest, up until the Venerate started throwing prisoners in here. What in all fates is so important about this particular metal that the Venerate are going to all this effort, sending people to their deaths just to get it?" "It's not just metal. It might actually be the most important resource in Ilshangath Dolteth," said Tal. "It's why Cassandrid insists on everyone calling this place the Mines. It's his way of focusing on Zvelar's new purpose, dissociating from the truth of what really happened. You know about the problem with vessels in Talon Gol?" Debian shook his head. "They corrupt," explained Tal. "After a few months, the Khan just starts to corrode whatever it's touching. The others blame it on the portal here or the Ilshara, but we've been able to find nothing about either that should cause it. Personally, I think it's something to do with Shemaloth's constant proximity. He was never in the one place for long before Talon Gol. But that's an unpopular opinion amongst the others, to say the least." He shrugged. "Regardless, metal taken from here, so long as it's been reforged into something new since the portal opened, is different. It's time-locked, I suppose, is the best explanation. It holds that same time decay marker that I mentioned earlier. When we send that reforged metal from here back to the outside world, the vessels we make with it are immune to the corruption." Debian exhaled as he put the pieces together in his head. Everything was beginning to make sense now. "The metal plates in Ilshangath Dolteth." "Exactly. They are the equivalent of these towers, suppressing the time corruption from the portal. Cassandra made those vessels from normal metal originally, but it was early on after the Ilshara went up, before we understood what would happen. Once they started to corrupt, we replaced them with the metal that came through. Almost all of the metal from here has gone toward that purpose," Tal added. Debian rubbed his face.
"I don't understand how you could have figured that out in the first place," he admitted.
"We got a nudge from here, actually." Tal gave a wry nod to his blank expression. "Following the flow of information between here and the outside world is complicated sometimes, to say the least. You have to remember that we're all from different eras. We converge here, and so, depending on who we talk to, it's possible to hear news from a time much later than our own. And the Dargaethan are no different. So when they go back to their own times, they can, in theory, take any information they've learned about the future with them."
"Except they go insane," observed Debian.
"Which isn't an insurmountable obstacle," countered Tal. "When Cassandrid first opened this portal, we sent several Dargaethan through. We knew that they were most likely to survive the journey, along with a couple of volunteers. Actual volunteers," he added at Davian's look. "Loyal people, good men and women. There was nothing for days, and we all assumed that it had been a failure. And then one of the Dargaethan came back. It was mad, but it was carrying a steel plate inscribed with information. It told us what had happened. The cataclysm. The thousands of people from all different eras all arriving at the same point in time. The need for ongoing supplies." He shrugged. "Diara noticed straight away that the metal was strange. We were already seeing the corruption of vessels in Talon Gol, so it wasn't long before we experimented and discovered just how valuable that steel was. And of course everyone saw the potential for getting information about the future. The description of the cataclysm was enough for Cassandra to figure out what had gone wrong on the Zvelar end, so we made the vessels to build this tower and sent them through the portal along with instructions." Tal sighed.
After that, it seemed logical to keep sending through Dargathan every few years with some food, knowledge of the current era, requests for more information, and any prisoners who were particularly difficult. Ones who we couldn't execute by law, but who could become martyrs if left locked up in Tel'Tarthan. The idea was that our people already there would manage messages and the reforging of the metal, the Dargathan would bring it all back, and the prisoners would do everything else.
So there are people in charge here, somewhere? They're sending messages back?
No. Tal looked troubled. I wrote the first and only message. I actually already had the vessels for the tower. They'd arrived here at the same moment I did. But I knew that if I didn't send that information back, it meant that someone else would eventually decide to. And having anyone else communicating with the Venerate was dangerous because they'd be able to relay anything they had learned about the Venerate's future, as well as the fact that I was here, which would have raised all sorts of questions. So I did it, and then I gathered all the volunteers we'd sent through over the years, convinced them that I was here to oversee things, and... He gestured, sighing heavily. Took care of them, he finished. Davian didn't follow for a second, then swallowed as he understood.
I see. He shook his head dazedly. Is that why the Dargathan turned on you?
No. They didn't know. I thought that Naya and I were the ones from furthest along the timeline, admitted Tal. I came through alone, and she'd already killed the Dargathan sent through with her, so I assumed that none of the others would know that I'd switched sides. But there was one.
Thashaseth, completed Davian, nodding.
Tal spread his hands. And here we are. The Dargathan understand this tower's purpose enough to let us maintain it, and the other gifted know that if they don't help supply it with essence, we'll all die. But the Dargathan also know that I'm a traitor, and most of the other people in this tower were sent to Zavalar specifically because they wanted to kill me in their respective eras.
He is a very popular man, chimed in Naya as she joined them again, wiping her hands on her clothes.
Davian turned, gazing in vaguely disturbed admiration at the floor where the bodies had been. Completely clean now, as if it had never happened.
You need to rest, added Naya to Tal, this time without any hint of playfulness in her voice.
She studied Davian assessingly.
You too, actually. I'm assuming that you don't always look this terrible.
Davian scowled at her, but Tal just chuckled. She's right. You're going to need your energy.
Davian frowned. For what?
Tal smiled.
To resume your training, of course, he said quietly.
The crimson light filtered through the sole window, glinting dully off the steel floor, illuminating Tal as he finally stirred. Davian glanced up from his study at the desk, where he'd been scrutinizing the reams of notes that Tal had been making about Zavalar for the past few months. Tal had offered them to him the previous night, and they had been well worth the read. He'd slept only a little, his body accustomed to wrenching itself up at first bell. Even so, he felt better than he had in a long time. Before retiring, Tal had restored a portion of Davian's reserve. It was nowhere near full, but neither was it close to running out anymore. That was enough for now.
"Heard anything interesting?"
asked Tal with a yawn, glancing at the sheets in Davian's hand.
"A few things," Davian admitted.
He flicked around, then held up one entry in particular.
"You say here that you think the Algoriate might be created from some combination of human bodies and dark, but you don't know for sure?"
That had seemed strange to Davian. Algoriate were supposed to be Banes, and Banes were supposed to be the creations of the Venerate. Tal stretched.
"I actually thought that they were a myth until I got here. Something the Andaran resistance made up to make us sound even more evil.
Rumors of them have been around for almost as long as the Ilshara, but trust me, if we'd known how to make and command creatures who could manipulate time, the war with the Darisians would have been over before it started.
He rubbed his face.
I don't think that they could do what they do, or even exist, away from Zavalar, though. They cannot seem to come within the radius of this tower's suppression, even though they are equally attracted to the Well of Dark sitting underneath.
He shrugged.
The other Banes are all inextricably tied to the Darklands, to the Rift. Without that connection, they die, so the Dargaethan, and now you, are proof that it is on some level accessible from here. But it's clearly still barely so. The Algoriots seem more linked to the inherent corruption of this place. I think their abilities might actually stem from it, which may be why they're able to manipulate time even within the time bubble Cassandrid created.
Davian nodded thoughtfully. He had wondered that about the Algoriat. Tal watched his expression.
I made the assumption about the bodies because of the human likeness and because we didn't see any for the first week or so here. It's all just speculation, though. I couldn't even tell you whether the Dargaethan have been the ones making them somehow, or whether they are happening as a result of something else. By accident, even. The only thing I'm sure of is that the Algoriat obey the Dargaethan so long as they can't see their source. And anything that they can see with a source... Well, you've probably experienced that by now.
He rubbed his eyes.
Any other burning questions before we get started?
Davian hesitated, then put the sheaf of paper down.
Why haven't you just killed yourself?
He asked quietly. Tal stared at him, then nodded in vague approval at the question.
Partly because I have no idea what would happen. I'm linked to a vessel called the Forge. That's what brings me back when I die. But if I die now, when does it bring me back? In this time? In my own time? Still inside Zavalar? I obviously do get out, but...
He shrugged.
Also partly because there was the possibility of talking to you. As soon as I found out about Theshaseth, I knew I had a chance to learn more about what was coming.
He glanced toward the door.
And partly because of Naya, he finished.
Are you and she...
No. No! Tal chuckled. I'm not sure that there's a man alive strong enough to keep up with her. But I do owe her.
Davian gave him a sideways look.
She seems a bit... intense. She is. But you can trust her with your life. Yesterday was just... Well, she's accustomed to everyone here wanting to kill me.
Tal grunted.
I rather think she likes you, actually. She doesn't usually give the people who come into my room uninvited the chance to explain themselves.
She knows who you are, I assume?
Asked Davian.
Everyone here does. She's the only one willing to look past it. That alone should tell you something about her.
Tal glanced out the window, noting the sun.
Has she stuck her head in yet?
Not since I woke up.
Tal gazed at the door for a second, then sighed, walking over and opening it a crack.
You need rest, he said sternly.
Davian could see Naya standing just outside, clearly guarding the entrance to Tal's room.
And you need privacy. The idiots downstairs are going to notice if you start playing with essence.
The two of them exchanged semi-jesting glares before Tal sniffed.
Fine. Give us an hour.
Then rest.
He shut the door again before Naya could respond.
So, said Tal, turning back to Davian, let's talk about how you're going to save us. Now, and in your present.
Davian nodded, though somewhat uncertainly.
I can barely touch Khan. It takes virtually all my focus just to hang on to it, he reminded the other man warningly. I'm not sure how much help I can really be.
A problem that we can fix, Tal assured him. If I drew a diagram for you, could you create some basic con machinery? Nothing particularly delicate or complex, just a few pieces of con here and there. You could stop to recover in between setting each line if you needed to. Davian frowned.
I think so. You want me to create a vessel?
He thought for a moment. It would have to be big. I don't think I could be exact enough if the lines were too small. That's fine. You remember what I did to you and Dylanus to, encourage your learning?
Davian snorted, half in irritation and half fondly.
Of course.
He'd barely slept over those 3 weeks, devouring almost as much information as during his entire 3 years studying at Caladel.
I can't do that to you here, but we can make a vessel that provides the same effect, giving you massively increased focus. Once you have that, you should be able to handle Khan more easily. You could then make a more effective version of the same vessel if you wanted. One that's smaller, lasts longer.
Davian's pulse quickened. That might work. He looked up at Tao. But then what?
Then we work on vessels that can help us withstand the journey back. Help us all survive the time stream.
Tao's eyes shone with anticipation.
That's a subject I've already been thinking about for centuries, Davian. I'll teach you as much as I can. Together, we can figure out a solution.
Do you really think we can do what even the Darisians couldn't? Asked Davian, unable to keep the dubiousness from his tone. You said it was impossible back in Dylanus.
We both know that I get out of here, observed Tao. If not this way, then how?
Davian thought, then conceded the point. If Tao was telling the truth and he'd come here more than a decade before Davian's birth, then he must escape, otherwise Davian would never have met Caden.
You really think I can learn what to do quickly enough? He asked, a pit in his stomach.
He was glad that there might be a way out for everyone, of course he was. But suddenly the weight on his shoulders seemed very heavy indeed. Tao smiled.
After Dylanus? Yes, I am confident.
Davian accepted the implied compliment with a cautious nod.
It's going to take months, isn't it? He said quietly. Even if we get this focus vessel working straight away.
Yes.
Davian shook his head, mind straying to the Dark Aethon that had interrupted them the previous day.
How am I possibly going to stay safely hidden for that length of time? He wondered.
Even if I end up able to use Khan effectively, I'm going to need to carry around that vessel every moment of every day. Tao clapped him on the shoulder, eyes burning.
That's the truly exciting part, Davian. The thing that's going to let you escape from Ilshan Gathdel Teth when you do get out of here, and that will let you take on any of the Venerate. You created a reserve within yourself, from Khan, without side effects.
Just think, what does that mean? Davian considered. That I'm immune to the side effects of Khan within the body, I suppose.
So?
Tal just watched impatiently, waiting. Davian felt his eyes go wide as he understood.
You want me to build vessels using my own body? He asked faintly.
Tal's grin widened.
Think about it, Davian, he said excitedly. Think about the possibilities.
Davian swallowed, mind racing.
And if I build a vessel the wrong way?
He shuddered as he considered the ramifications.
I read about vessel construction back in Dylanus, you know. The Darisians used to make sure the novices were isolated because sometimes the things they made exploded.
You had all your limbs when I killed you, observed Tao.
He held up his hands at Davian's expression.
Just saying.
Davian found himself caught between a glare and a laugh, eventually relenting to the latter.
Hard to argue with that.
He took a breath, still trying to grasp the possibilities.
Fates. So what do you know about creating vessels?
Davian shook his head ruefully.
Not much.
he admitted. Only what we skimmed in Dilanus, and then I think I learned a bit more when we were studying to fix the boundary, but... He shrugged helplessly. There hasn't exactly been a lot of time to tinker.
The basics aren't difficult, Tal assured him, and a vessel to increase your concentration isn't especially complicated. You're simply targeting certain points in the mind, stimulating them.
Sounds safe, said Davian dryly.
You handled it just fine in Dilanus, and you'll have more opportunity to study this time around.
Tal's gaze roved around the room, his expression turning thoughtful.
Hiding you in here will be tricky until we can create something to make you invisible, but the Dargathan provide us with enough food to go around. I'll have to figure out where you're going to sleep, too, he added absently.
Davian hesitated.
There's someone back south of the breach, he said suddenly, coming to a decision.
Even discounting that the man needed him to survive, he couldn't just abandon Raelith.
I'm going to bring him here, too.
Tal's brow crinkled.
No. He said the word gently but firmly. I assume that this was the man you mentioned, the one who helped you when you arrived, and I am sorry that you cannot return the favor. But he would be dead weight here. If he has no reserve, he cannot help supply the tower. And we get enough rations to stretch to one more, but not two.
Davian scowled.
Then he can share mine.
The scavengers don't have long before they've picked the city clean. And from what you've said so far, I don't imagine that the Dargathan will have much use for them once that happens. I know I can't save them all, but I can save him.
He gestured out the window.
Raelith was a craftsman, worked with metal. I'm sure he has experience operating a forge.
His name is Raelith? Something about the way Tal asked indicated a shifting of his position, a sudden increase in interest.
You know him?
Tal shook his head.
Only by reputation. And if it's the same man, he said thoughtfully, would he even be willing? Most people here aren't exactly admirers of mine. And if he's who I'm thinking of...
I'll convince him, said Davian firmly.
Tal vacillated, then gestured in defeat.
No more favors after this, he said. And for the love of El, do not get caught. I know you don't die, but from what you've said, Gassandred still has information that he wants from you. And he knows that you can get out in the end, too. That means you're only in here to buy him time... to keep you away from me in your present for as long as possible. He'll still want you getting out on his terms, though, so by now, Theshaseth probably intends to take you back as soon as he finds you.
It's not a favor because I wasn't asking, Davian said firmly.
He smiled slightly.
But thank you. And yes, I'll be careful.
I'll get rid of the rope this time, too.
Tal chuckled, then eyed the red-tinged shadows out the window.
Well, if you're going to do it...
They headed for the door. Naya was still outside. When she saw Davian, she frowned, her gaze immediately sliding to Tal in askance.
He's fetching a friend, said Tal, a touch wryly.
Out of the question, Naya said immediately.
Clearly not. Davian glared at her. The woman glared back until finally Davian just shook his head, breaking the gaze.
I'll see you both soon.
Make sure we're the only ones, Tal emphasized. If the Dargathan or any of the gifted here spot you, it's going to make things difficult. And I'm not sure how many more bodies we can make disappear.
Davian shifted uncomfortably. From the way he said it, Tal wasn't specifically talking about the Dargathan. They exited the tower, Tal going first to ensure that there was no one around to see. Davian lingered at the edge of the unpatrolled space, watching the wandering Algoriad ahead uneasily.
The black substance. Dark, the scavengers call it, he said. I've seen people infected. Is there a cure?
Tal studied him intently.
None of which I know. Essence seems to push it back, but that's the best it can do.
Davian's heart sank.
Still, he wasn't about to reveal Raelith's affliction before he brought him here. Too easy for Tal to change his mind. "What is it?" he asked eventually. Tal considered.
"Time is damaged here, irreparably," he said. "The substance you're talking about is a kind of rot. Like a wound expelling infection to the surface, time is trying to reject what Cassandra did, and that is the result."
Tal held his gaze.
"Don't go near it, Davian. It's well beyond our power to deal with."
Davian took a deep breath and nodded.
"I'll see you soon," he said quietly.
He stepped out into the Sea of Elgoriat once again. Chapter 29 Davian moved from room to room absently, his mind more on convincing Raelith than on the task at hand.
"Shaddat! Shaddat!"
The mildly irritated voice broke him from his reverie. He looked up to see Raelith standing next to a desk, arms crossed.
"I know you're trying to decide whatever it is you're trying to decide, but I still need metal to avoid starving. So if you could please try not to ignore entire pieces of furniture held together with nails?"
Davian blinked, then shook his head ruefully.
"Sorry."
He backtracked to the desk and started pulling out drawers, breaking apart the wood to get to the nails. The journey back south of the breach had taken longer than Davian had anticipated last night. He had arrived just after first bell, only to discover that Raelith had already left. Fortunately, the man had been scouring the area close to their hidden stash of metal, and after only an hour of searching, Davian had managed to locate his friend again.
"Why are you even out here?" Davian asked as he worked. "You should be resting. We still have lots of metal left." "But it won't last forever."
Neither man spoke for a few moments, and then Raelith sighed.
"I don't suppose that you were daydreaming about something not to do with our kind of aid?"
Davian grimaced, prying apart two thin boards.
"He's trying to help. He didn't have to let me come back. He wants you to stay here and help him escape, when you could potentially just get out. Of course he's doing you favors."
Raelith's voice was scornful.
"I doubt those favors will extend to me for long, though. And you still want me to come and work with him? In an Elgoriat-surrounded prison?"
"We've been through this," said Davian irritably. They had. Too many times over the past few hours.
"Even if you're right, and I don't believe you are, there's simply no future here, Raelith. You'll die if you don't come with me."
Raelith snorted but didn't respond. Davian watched him, his frustration only growing.
"You need to get past this," he said, keeping his voice calmer this time. "You talk to me about believing in El, about what it entails, about hating the acts of those who do evil but not the people themselves."
He met Raelith's gaze.
"Do you really believe that?"
Raelith stared at him, wide-eyed for a second. Then he chuckled ruefully.
"Well," he said, "at least you've been listening."
He didn't say anything else, just returned to his work. Davian hesitated, then continued what he was doing as well. The silence was somehow more companionable this time. Raelith hadn't agreed to anything, but he was thinking now. Davian could see that much. It was something. The rest of the day passed in their regular rhythm. As soon as last bell rang out, they finished up and headed back. Not long before they would have reached their own camp, they walked past a campfire crackling in the gutted remains of a building, and Davian realized with a start that Marish was one of the men around it. The big man had his arm in a sling and was asleep, as were two others. The final member of their team stared morosely into the flames, expression haunted. Davian grunted in satisfaction, despite a sliver of guilt worming its way into his gut. Raelith had mentioned that word of Marish's injury had spread quickly and that the other teams were no longer handing over their shares. Some had even taken to threatening Marish in return, forcing his team to pay back some of the metal they had taken. The rumor was they hadn't been left with enough to get any rations for the past 2 days. Combined with injuries that prevented any meaningful scavenging, it was doubtful they would survive for much longer. Raelith saw them too. He paused, then got a determined expression in his eyes, turning and starting toward the fire.
"Raelith," said Davian softly, "they've learned their lesson."
Raelith ignored him, marching straight into the circle of light. The man on watch started as he realized that someone was there, his expression immediately darkening as he spotted Davian trailing after Raelith.
"Come to gloat," the man snarled. "Better be quick, else the Elgoriot will have us all for a snack, and that's going to happen to us sooner rather than later now anyway."
"You're shot?" asked Raelith.
The hulking man gestured to Marish and the other injured man.
"What do you think?" he asked bitterly.
His eyes slid to the half-full bucket in Davian's hand, and for a second his eyes glittered with greed. The expression quickly passed as his gaze switched to Davian himself, though. Raelith studied the man silently, then turned to Davian, holding out his hand.
"The pail."
Davian felt his brow crease, but he silently handed Raelith the bucket containing their day's scavenge. To his horror, Raelith walked forward and held it out, offering it.
"We have enough already."
The man stared at Raelith with a mixture of shock and suspicion, as if barely able to believe that this wasn't some kind of trap. When Raelith shook the pail at him impatiently, the metal inside rattling, the other man snatched it away and scrambled back as if fearful that Raelith would change his mind. Raelith turned on his heel and strode off without another word. Davian gaped at the man peering into the bucket, who was looking disbelievingly at his good fortune, and then hurried after Raelith.
"Why?" he asked furiously, still stunned. "We